This morning we're continuing our look at qualifications for elders. This, in fact, will be the last as we go through the process here in the coming months. There may be some other lessons, maybe dealing with some things to consider, you know, while it's going on. But in terms of the qualifications, this is the last in that particular series. And as promised last week, I want us to deal with, I guess, what can be somewhat of a thorny question, I guess maybe somewhat controversial, and that is, what if one of his children becomes unfaithful after leaving home? We talked some last week about the need to have believing children, children who are Christians, but also those who are faithful to the Lord. And so, what about a situation such as what you see here? How do we deal with something like that? Well, I want to first of all say that in dealing with this particular question, I'm just trying to be as honest with the text and with all the different passages that bear on this subject as I possibly can. I don't have any agenda whatsoever. There's no one that I'm trying to push through, either here or somewhere else. And there's no one that I'm trying to keep out, either here or somewhere else. I'm trying to be as honest with the text as possible. The only reason I mention that is I do realize that sometimes when you go into a study and you do have an agenda, it can very much influence your takeaway from what is said. And so I'm trying to, again, be as honest with it and look at it as comprehensively as possible. So let's look at various considerations as we attempt to answer this particular question. Consideration number one, I want you to notice as we turn to 1 Timothy chapter 3, and the same would be true of the list of qualifications over in Titus chapter 1, but I want you to notice the emphasis on the present, what is presently the case with a man who is serving as an elder. There in 1 Timothy 3, in verse 2, he says, a bishop then must be, and then he goes on to name, of course, a whole number of different qualifications. A bishop must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior. Do those need to continue to be the case? In other words, for a man who is serving as an elder at any given time, does that presently need to be the case that he is all of these things? And I believe most of us would agree that certainly that is true. Having his children in submission, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 4, would that fit into the same category? In other words, does that need to be an ongoing thing, to be presently the case? And then, of course, the way it's expressed over in Titus chapter 1 and verse 6 is having faithful children or believing children. So again, I believe the emphasis that we're trying to make here is that these are not just qualifications that this man possessed at one time, but qualifications that he continues to have. Things that would be presently the case for any man who is serving as an elder. Now, you might be thinking or asking the question, but does that nail down the answer to the question we posed? And the answer would be no. That is not to suggest that this in any way fully answers the question, okay, what about the man who has a child who becomes unfaithful after leaving home? No, it doesn't. But I believe it's worth mentioning. And I believe for a number of reasons, we need to make sure that we get this consideration out in front of us. But here's another consideration. And that is that the congregation will certainly have more confidence in a man if his children, all of them, remain faithful. I mean, that's almost axiomatic, isn't it? I mean, that's just a given that that will certainly be the case. What you see right here is obviously the best case scenario, at least in terms of the qualifications that have to do with children. If this is the case right here, that is that all of his children remain faithful, then no one in the congregation is having to wrestle with any doubts. We're not having to try to figure out, okay, he's got several that are faithful, that one, now what kind of problems were there with that? We're not having to wrestle with any of those sort of doubts. And so provided that this man is qualified in every other way, the congregation would be able to appoint this sort of man with the fullest confidence. There's a credibility there that's not going to be quite as strong or quite as high with someone whose child has become unfaithful later. Here's another consideration. An unfaithful child could certainly adversely affect one's testimony among those who are outside, as brought out in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 7, especially if this child's behavior is well known. That is one of the qualifications listed in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 7, for a man to have a good testimony among those who are outside. Why is that the case? Why is that the case? See, sometimes when we look at specific qualifications like that, I believe it's important for us to see, as best we can, well, what's the underlying principle there? Why would he even make that a consideration? And I realize that sometimes we just don't know in cases similar to this, but I believe we do know here. A man needs to have a good testimony among those who are outside because his reputation has a lot to do with the reputation of the church. In other words, if his reputation is not exactly what it ought to be, then the church's reputation suffers. All right, now what's the problem if the church's reputation suffers? Our influence in the community, our ability to teach others becomes impacted, right? And so we do have to think about the seriousness of the issue from this standpoint. And so if someone has an unfaithful child and they're perhaps the child is still around here and the behavior of that child is well known. Now, again, they may not understand all that went on with that. In other words, fair or not, what is going to be their conclusion regarding this man and his ability to train his children? Again, it may be an unfair assessment on their part, but many times that's the assessment that they're going to make. Not only, though, does it affect the reputation of the local church, but doesn't this get back to really affecting the reputation of the gospel and maybe even of the Lord himself? Again, maybe they've gone way too far. They don't understand all the particulars of the situation. But if we decide to appoint a man in a case like this, in other words, people might say, okay, well, is this the effect of the gospel? Is this how Christians behave? Again, we just have to take these kind of things into consideration. Now, we also need to understand, and as we look at this particular point here on the screen, it may be that a child lives way off somewhere else, and the people in the community know nothing about this child. And so there's no connection made whatsoever between the parent and the child. In other words, a parent may have an unfaithful child, and it may not be affecting his testimony among those who are outside. There's a lot of issues that come into play as to how much this is going to impact that. But again, we have to think about the seriousness of this particular issue. All right, but then another consideration, just in the interest of balance here. We do know, however, that children do have a will of their own. Can we all agree on that? Is it a true statement that their faithfulness is not wholly dependent on their parents? I don't see any other way to see it. You know, when we look at Scripture as a whole and everything that is brought out in various places, their faithfulness is not wholly dependent on their parents. Perhaps a better way to ask the question and maybe get right to the point, can a child reject good training? Is there the potential there for that to happen? In other words, can both mother and father really offer a child good training and that child choose to reject that good training. And maybe to ask it another way, to put it in the framework of the way the qualifications are discussed, can a man rule his house well and have one of his children go astray? Can that be done? Again, I believe most certainly it can. Before we judge too quickly in regard to this particular man who may have a child who has become unfaithful on their own, before we judge too quickly, we say, well, that settles it right there. They didn't do a good job. Before we decide that too quickly, obviously a very important question to ask is, what about the others? In other words, if he has two or three other children who are doing quite well, we've got to kind of wrestle with the question, right? Is, okay, they must have done something right. As well as these other two or three are doing. And kind of that gets back to the point that we're raising here, right? You would think that, okay, the same kind of training was given to all. The others seemed to take to that training very well, and one of them rejected it. Again, very important questions for us to have to wrestle with. And I will say that sometimes, if we're not careful as parents, we may give ourselves a pass too quickly. In other words, having acknowledged that, okay, it's not wholly dependent upon us, and that is most certainly the case, taking into consideration all that we've said on this point up till now, sometimes we do make some mistakes. And it is possible to do a good job with two or three and do a poor job with one. Because every child is different. And every child has to be approached sometimes in a different fashion. And so it is possible, yes, that someone did a poor job with one of them. But, again, that's a difficult judgment to make. And so we have to look at the whole situation. And then another consideration to make is only the local church of which this man is a member can judge how well he ruled his house, how well he trained his children. And I know there's still limitations to how much we can judge that situation, but the point that I'm trying to make is, looking from the outside at another congregation, let's say there's another local church somewhere else that we know about, and some man's been appointed to serve as an elder, and we know something about one of his children. We know that one of his children's unfaithful, and our judgment is, how in the world could they have appointed that man as an elder? I just don't understand. They must not care about the qualifications. The point that I'm trying to make here is that church knows better than we do in terms of what that man did and didn't do. They're able to talk one-on-one with him. I mean, they've watched him through the years in training his children. They've watched the children themselves. They've probably had personal discussions as they go through the elder appointment process. They've had one-on-one discussions with this man. And so they're much better equipped to answer these sort of questions than people on the outside. The more I have thought about it through the years in terms of this whole elder appointment and deacon appointment thing, this is certainly one place where congregational autonomy is huge. Isn't it nice that somebody somewhere else, some board somewhere else, is not deciding these kind of things for us? The folks who know each other the best, that live and work with one another, they're the ones who are best able to figure out these situations. Now, we're not at all trying to suggest in all this that, okay, man's got an unfaithful child, let's push him through and let's don't even bat an eye about it. Now, the whole point of all of this is let's look at all of these different considerations before we make any kind of judgment about it. I believe there are some questions to raise that might help us in terms of evaluating this whole situation as far as a man having a child who has become unfaithful. Did the child become unfaithful immediately after leaving home? And I'm not trying to suggest this is the deal breaker or anything like that, but it's a question worth asking. In other words, as soon as they left the house, the minute they walked out the door, then they just rejected it all. You know, I'm not saying that answers it fully either way, but it's a question worth asking. What efforts did they make, that is, both the mother and the father, what efforts did they make and do they continue to make to restore the child? Don't you think that's important? Says a lot, really. I think it speaks volumes about the care and concern for the child and the approach that they're continuing to make with that child. Certainly something to think about as we evaluate the worthiness of this potential elder. And again, as we suggested earlier, what about the other children? Can we automatically rule out someone who maybe has two or three children who are doing very well, who are very spiritually minded, who are very actively involved, and yet they have one child who has gone astray? Can we automatically rule that person out? Gets back to the question we asked earlier. Can a man rule his house well and still have one to go astray? Questions to consider. How much confidence does the church still have in him? And that's really what it's going to ultimately come down to, right, as we go through this process. You know, how many of us still have confidence? In other words, based on everything that we know about the man, and again, there are still going to be some limitations. We don't follow people home. We're not there every day. We don't know all that they say and do and not say and do. But if there's a measure of confidence throughout the congregation in this man's ability, then again, we shouldn't rule that person out. And then, of course, another very important consideration is, how does he feel? How does he feel about the situation? Some of us have probably known people through the years, I certainly have, who withdrew their name from consideration because they were so concerned about this unfaithful child that they had. They said, I just don't believe I can serve effectively. I just believe it's going to be a distraction to me. They may even think that it's going to be a distraction to others. Some people remove their names from consideration because of that. And I think we can all respect that. And yet there may be others who are bothered by that, certainly. It's not that they don't take it seriously. But their attitude may be, you know, I'm willing to serve if the congregation has full confidence in me. And I don't think we can fault someone for an attitude like that. Sometimes it just takes some one-on-one talks with people and saying, and sometimes we may even have to try to persuade people. You may have done a little bit better job than you think you did. Again, you know, we don't want people going against their conscience or anything like that. Again, a lot of questions have to be raised, and I wish it was made so crystal clear that we had some formula to follow and it was just laid out to where we knew exactly what to do with every particular situation that arose, and I just can't see that. And so we have to look at it very comprehensively as we consider all of this. All right. A few other things I want us to discuss before we close the lesson today, and this is just kind of some random thoughts concerning the qualifications for elders. First of all, let's not focus so much on the wife and children, our family qualifications, that we forget the character qualifications. There's so much been said and written and preached about concerning these qualifications as they pertain to the wife and to the children. You know, sort of, a lot of times what can get lost in all of that is, what kind of man is he? You know, what kind of character does he have? And so, really, we just need to be careful about honing in on just one or two and forgetting the big picture. Another point, and this is something that Alan Haas reminded me of last week, and I appreciate him bringing that out. And I told him that I would bring that out in this morning's lesson. And so that's what I want to do. And that is the character required of an elder. The character required of an elder is the same required of any mature Christian. And the same would be true of the character of a deacon as well. And the point we're trying to make here is these are not superhuman qualities. Okay? These are not something like, oh, wow, I just don't believe I could ever reach point. No. No, these are qualities that the Lord would have for any mature Christian. And so these are very much within our reach. All of you young men here, and I'm talking to some of the very youngest here. Character-wise, you can become all that these qualifications would suggest. You can be all of those things. There's no reason why you can't be. No superhuman effort required to attain. Speaking to the younger men here, and this has to do with the need for the ongoing need for elders in the future. We're going to need some more here in the future. Wherever you may be, some of you may move somewhere else, you may be far from here. Those local churches, they're going to continue to need elders. And so we got to keep producing them. We got to keep training men and helping men to see the value of being elders. And so to the younger men, keep studying. Keep growing. Utilize fully the abilities that you have in serving the Lord. Marry a faithful Christian. Train your children in the ways of the Lord. Learn from good elders. No magical formula for, developing good elders. Where do good elders come from? Good elders come from strong, mature Christians. That's where they come from. You know, there's not some special online course that you can take somewhere. So, that's it right there. Just good Bible training. Good, strong, mature Christians turn into good elders. And I would also say that in terms of this, throughout the Scriptures, the Lord talks about those that we should esteem. I've never read anywhere in the Scriptures where God said to esteem those highly who do well academically. Now, I'm not saying there shouldn't be a measure of commendation that comes with that. I'm just saying that God nowhere commends academic prowess. Those who get a great job and make a whole lot of money. Again, nowhere does the Lord say, okay, that's what's most valuable to me. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 13, Paul is talking there about the congregation's attitude toward the elders. It says to esteem them very highly in love for what? For their work's sake. For their work's sake. Now, think about that phrase, for their work's sake. And let's move just beyond elders to those. Those who are working for the Lord. Those who are doing things to advance His kingdom. Those who are involved in the things that particularly relate to the Lord. Those are the people that we should esteem the highest. And so, all that I'm trying to say is, parents, let's make sure that we set that good example. That the people that we value the most are the ones who are working hard for the Lord. And let's get that across to our children as well. Now the impact of that hopefully will be that they will aspire to do more for the Lord. That they will aspire to become a good deacon. They will aspire to become a good elder. We need to make sure what it is that we value the most. Who means the most to us? Good elders should be esteemed highly. Good deacons should be esteemed highly. Women who are involved in teaching, and not just teaching here, but those who are very much involved in training their children, they need to be esteemed highly. Our young men who are involved in various aspects of our worship, they need to be esteemed highly. What you do here is more important than what you do in that classroom. What you do here is more important than what you do in that job place. This is what matters the most. And when all of that begins to matter the most to us, when these functions, when these roles matter the most to us, then all of a sudden now we're aspiring to those things. And those things mean a lot to us personally. And we want to help in all the ways that we can. In other words, the thing about desiring, if any man desires the office of a bishop, we don't have near as much problem with that desire for it. Because they know they're desiring something which is very valuable, very precious in the eyes of the Lord. Let's make sure we see the big picture. Going back to the lessons we looked at earlier. Yes, by all means, know 1 Timothy 3:1-7. Know Titus 1:5-9. But don't just know that. Look at the different ways that elders are described. Look at the duties that they're given. Look at the fuller description of character that's found in other passages. The only way that we can get God's picture of an elder is by looking at all of those passages. God's picture of an elder is not just found in those two passages. It's found in a number of passages. So let's make sure that we see the big picture. Go ahead and get out your song books. We'll sing the song of encouragement here in just a moment. I know you hear me say this quite often. You may be wondering, well, just how many favorite songs does he have? But one of my favorites is Beneath the Cross of Jesus. And there's a line in there that says, upon the cross of Jesus, mine eye, it seems, can see the very dying form of one who suffered there for me. And with smitten heart, this is someone looking at the cross, with smitten heart, two wonders I confess. Two wonders. The wonders of His glorious love and my unworthiness. Those are two of the biggest points, obviously, that we need to get out of the cross. The wonders of His glorious love and my own unworthiness. You see, that kind of love was shown to those who were completely unworthy of such love. And those who were completely unworthy of such love includes you and me. No greater love has ever been shown or ever will be shown. It is the greatest love story ever told. And it ought to tug at your heart. And absolutely demands a response from you. And we hope that you will respond in love to His love today. That you will come believing in Jesus, repenting of your sins, confessing your faith in Him, and being buried with Him in baptism. Maybe you've gone astray. Same love ought to be constraining you. It ought to be pulling you back. How can I continue to show such contempt for that love? Well, we know that on a human level, right? We look at children whose parents have bent over backwards for them and they're showing that they're not giving their parents the time of day. We say, what a sorry child. That's a sorry child right there. His parents did this for them and that for them and bent over backwards and sacrificed for them, and that child doesn't want anything to do with them. We see it on a human level, don't we? It's far greater contempt to show that sort of response to our Heavenly Father and the love that He's shown for us. If we can assist you in any way, come as we stand and sing.